Hello, today I talked to Peter Rahal, co-founder of RX Bar, a nutrition bar that seems to have popped on the scene just yesterday and helped to further fuel the healthy snack category. Despite, or rather because, of its simple proposition, 3 to 5 ingredients and no BS, which means no bad stuff, it seems to have made a significant dent in the market. Significant enough that Kellogg noticed, maybe suffered, maybe wanted to ingest the brand creation skills of this venture. In any event, they bought it for a reported $600 million in 2017 from Peter and his co-founder. Humble and hardworking is how Peter describes the product as well as the culture of the little company. And I would add also ambitious. So maybe it's not such a big surprise that Peter actually stayed on after selling the brand as a CEO of the now subsidiary, rather than jetting off to a life by the pool somewhere in the Caribbean. RX Bar looks like a case study in a straightforward, focused proposition by a brand that fills a clearly defined consumer need, winning over what seem more complex propositions. But judge for yourself.
Please listen carefully.
Hello and welcome to this new episode of the Überbrands podcast, the podcast in which we discuss brands that are desired beyond price, performance, or even reason, brands that seduce rather than sell, that add some myth to the material and shine from the inside out. We call them Überbrands, and we, that is your host JP Kühlwein and occasional co-host Wolf Schaefer. And today I'm very excited to have Peter Rahal with us. Peter is the co-founder of RX Bar, which is a nutrition bar that's really hot, even though it was only created in 2013. Peter calls in from Chicago, where it's really cold right now, so we appreciate even more him having volunteered to be on the podcast. Hello, Peter.
Thank you for having me, JP.
Peter, you've co-founded RX Bar 2013. We have listeners from around the world. I'm not sure, are you sold in Austria and Australia and worldwide already, or might it make sense to explain a little bit what RX is all about?
Yeah, so we're a whole food protein bar, and we also make nut butters and kids line using whole real food ingredients. And current markets we're in right now are United States, Canada, and United Kingdom. That's our distribution to date, but that's obviously expanding, and so is our product offering as well.
In the US, it feels like it's been really exploding because you really came on the scene quite recently, and it seems like you are a real hit product. Is that right?
Yeah. So we started in 2013 with a really small market. You know, we spent the first 2 years essentially only online, so direct to consumer. And we focused on a niche in CrossFit and just early adopters of nutrition, so paleo, Whole30. So that was a small market we started in. And I'd actually argue that that market was pretty uncompetitive at the time. And so we actually didn't even focus on retail or traditional consumers, customers, or markets. You know, for the first 2 years, and once we got some momentum and traction and really some volume, we eventually commercialized, rebranded the product, and then went into distribution to the natural channel, so Whole Foods, Sprouts, and other amazing customers, and continued to grow distribution and expand the market. And it really took off, and I think to me, the demand really was there, and we have an amazing team that executed it flawlessly, but there was just a really great product market fit and the timing of it. So as competitive as category was, there really wasn't a product or brand communicating the way we communicated and delivered the functional benefits we did as well.
Your communication strikes me as extremely simple, and that's probably the appeal, right? Because you have like 3 or 4 ingredients on the front, and then it says no BS, which I think stands for no bad stuff, but could be interpreted otherwise as well. Do you think that's a big part of the appeal, the whole simplicity of it?
Yeah. So when you look at the category in bars, especially like natural products, there's so much to talk about. gluten-free, soy-free, dairy-free. A lot of the products have so many claims. And so for a customer, it can be quite confusing. And the way our product's designed, there's so many claims. Like we could claim, you know, 50 to 100 things, no sugar added, et cetera. And the reality is what we learned through our customers was what really mattered was our simple ingredients, the type of ingredients, the content of them. And that was the value proposition. That was fundamentally the main differentiator and the reason why people loved the product, not because of the brand, not because of whatever certain claims. So through that process of talking to customers, we really learned that we just leaned in on that message essentially. And that's a big part of our success, was visually communicating that simply.
And where did that idea come from? I mean, were you into CrossFit or other sports and looking for nutrition, or was it purely a business idea, like looking for a gap in the market, or how did it come about?
So it came about out of like our own needs. So you look at bars, I think one of the jobs the products do, it fundamentally saves you time. So it's another way of saying it, it's convenient. You just grab it and go. And so we're huge consumers of bars, like loved them, ate them every day. And we had our own frustration. It was like, why isn't there like a simple protein bar? Why isn't there one using high quality protein? Why doesn't that exist? And so out of that own frustration and pursuit of a better product, we created our RxBar.
Is there a deeper mission behind this, or is this a pure product of problem solution?
Problem solution. Like, we really wanted to solve that problem and fill that vacancy in the market. And, you know, we think of our jobs as food manufacturers. Our job is to make the best food possible for our customers. So that's what we focused on.
And are you worried then that if that's quote-unquote all you got, that once people literally read the recipe off your bar, they can simply imitate it and it will be the same? Or are there other things that differentiate you?
We try not to like worry about competition too much. Especially if you look at the food business, people generally copy one another, and it's very like reactionary innovation strategy. And for us, we want to play offense and focus on customers' needs and customers' problems, whether they're aware of them or not. And so we don't really spend too much time worrying about imitation. We can't control if someone wants to copy us, and we can't spend our time and energy worrying about that, essentially.
But it sounds like you do care quite a bit about what your customer and yourself want. Do you have any kind of special approach on how to find that out? Do you mingle with that community, or has that always been your community? How do you do what the big ones might call consumer research?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we spend a ton of time getting high quality customer feedback, I would call it. So whether that's on the street, in the field, talking to people, in store, talking to customers who are shopping the category, on the phone when customers call in. I mean, there's a wealth of knowledge in this. It's really gold they're giving us when they're giving us feedback. And what you really need to do is collect as much feedback as possible from different sources that is high quality, direct sources, and then pattern map to connect the dots to see, is there a solution? Is there a theme? What's the best way to kind of look at all of it? And that's kind of our approach. And that's how the company was really founded. We have a bias towards that high quality data rather than just syndicated data or other means. Sales data is super important and it tells you a story, but understanding consumers and understanding what's important to them, what frustrations do they have, why do they love something, why do they not like something, and doing that at scale is really important. I mean, for any innovator, any entrepreneur, any marketer, you got to know what the customers want and see if you can help them understand it, and then also like see what they don't want. See if you can understand what they don't recognize what they want, if that makes sense.
Gotcha. And you say get customer feedback at scale. How did you scale that customer feedback?
Whenever you see it, you value it and you take it. For example, if a customer calls me from Arkansas complaining about something or requesting something, that is gold. That's very valuable. I take that and record and build intuition based off that information. It's not like a overly it's more of an intuitive process than a very like systematic process.
Gotcha. And I get from your website that you think that is rather unique versus the industry that seems to work more on a surface level. I think you say we're industry outsiders, and that's a good thing. Do you believe that you have a leg up there on big food in terms of listening maybe closer to the feedback? Or
For sure. I mean, a convention is, if it's not hard data, it's not valid. So I think it's more of an entrepreneurial approach, and it's a humble approach in the sense that you got to like get on the street and go in the store. But it does give us an edge because, you know, we're trying to reverse engineer what made it successful in the early days and apply it at scale. So it's a very entrepreneurial approach that has worked for us. I mean, it's the origin of the company, so we want to just continue to apply that approach.
It's one thing to have a gut feel of what's needed, to get some input, to formulate a good product. And I think I read you literally did that. It's the kitchen kind of story, you know, put it together at home. But it's another to get the awareness and kind of be able to scale that up. How did you succeed with that? How did you reach an inflection point where, you know, volumes took off? How did you gain awareness and distribution?
We started with a really small market, like at CrossFit gyms and other independent gyms. And then we focused on a very particular consumer, being people who are into paleo nutrition early adopters, early adopters of different nutrition trends. And so we only focused on them in the U.S. market. It's a really small market. And then we got a lot of awareness and penetrated that market. And then once we got to a size, we were comfortable to kind of cross the chasm to a new market, a new consumer set. So that awareness, I guess, in the early days was driven by like being present in the market. So going to all the events, calling all the gyms, emailing, having relationships with people who are influential in nutrition, et cetera. And that drove a ton of awareness. It was, you know, we didn't have big budgets to do advertising, so it was more of a grassroots approach, sending the product out, getting samples, getting feedback. And then reality is once you get, you know, the word of mouth is a really popular way to spread the word.
Right.
You satisfy a customer, you make them happy, they're going to talk and recommend it. And so we really focused on service, which is a hard thing to measure, but we just knew anecdotally that it meant a lot to customers if they were overserved. And then as we grew the business, we realized retail is a huge opportunity, and we were, you know, had a really thoughtful strategy on how to approach retail. And the reality is we had a lot of awareness. We just didn't have distribution. So a lot of people weren't willing to buy it online, but we had gained a lot of awareness. So once we got into stores, grocery stores, people had heard about us and they wanted to try it. They just weren't willing to go online to buy it. And so there was a lot of pent up demand in the market. So as soon as we were in store, it kind of unleashed that demand. So we just had to supply it.
And that pent up demand was on a national level, or did it start out regionally?
It was regional, I would say. I mean, it starts in the most, you know, like New York, East Coast, Southern California, the bigger markets. It's hard to say national or not, but, you know, more urban areas generally were more successful for us.
So in our language, it seems like you had an Uber target. You had a very strong followership, a design target in the kind of nutrition fitness area, and they spread the word of mouth. Did you get funding at the beginning or collect funding to help promote the word of mouth, to kind of put some oil in the fire? Or was that truly organic and you self-financed all of this?
We didn't raise like traditional capital. Jared and I just put together our own money. So first started with like $10,000 just to buy material to make product. And then later we just used debt and like personally guaranteed debt, basically my dad and Jared's mother. So that's how we really were able to finance the company. And then yeah, but we didn't raise money from traditional investors. I mean, we explored it and were attracted to it, but it just was always hard to value the companies.
Gotcha. But that's quite a feat to kind of break even or be able to finance the startup yourself. Do you have a business background? What did you do before RX Bar?
I grew up in the food business on the supply side. So I used to work for a fruit processing plant and then also logistics as well. So I knew the supply chain part of the business. And then, no, we didn't have, like, I didn't have an MBA or anything, but I just had common sense and also good people around. So my dad and Jared were very thoughtful, and the things we needed to get done were quite logical. So,
gotcha.
And my dad's like an old school business guy. So, you know, you got to serve customers, make great product, and make sure you have gross margin.
So you kind of had a board there.
Perhaps, yeah.
And talking about supply, so did you make them yourself, or did you find a contract manufacturer to make your products?
We manufactured ourselves for like the first 2 years. Mm-hmm. So we made it first, started in my parents' basement. We're there for about 3 months, and then moved to a bigger facility in the west side of Chicago for about a little over a year. And then eventually we're a partner to commercialize it, you know, outsource it to a professional. So, but again, our origins are in manufacturing. So it's pretty mission critical to manufacture ourselves, despite how hard it was.
And you're still quite involved in the manufacturing part of the business?
Anyone who makes food, whether you outsource it or hire someone to help you do it, like you're a food manufacturer. So we manufacture food. That's what we do.
Now, a lot on your website and what I read about your story, and you just said it as well, it reads like you felt more comfortable among friends. I think it says we're just friends who put this together. And you have a certain level of skepticism when it comes to bigger industry, it seems like, or at least you feel like you're not an industry insider. Nevertheless, at one point you decided to sell the RX Bar business. Can you describe a little bit what it takes to go through that process and how you decided to sell and who to sell to?
So the plan was always to build a great company, make a great product for our customers. That was always the focus. We were obsessed with that. The idea to like sell the company was really a decision that came later based on some opportunities. Our job is to make great food for our customers and in the marketplace. And the reality is, as we grew bigger, we realized, wait, we're at an inflection point. And the question is, like, do we want to be a private company, or do we want to be a public company, or roll into a business that has a difficult cause and can help scale what we're doing and grow faster ultimately. So for me and Jared, like, we didn't want to like keep this as a family business. We wanted to roll up into a bigger organization and help scale the business. That was our thought process. And Kellogg is an organization, one of the more amazing food companies in Midwest. It's values based, and so we're pretty aligned on like strategy, operating model, and values as well.
It will sound like a conflict to quite a few people, I would think, though, right? Because right now people are very critical about a lot of processed food. And it just seems to me, my perception would be, a lot of people who choose your bar might actually be those people who are looking for a simpler, less sugary, less processed, etc. food. How do you deal with that potential conflict?
So I don't understand the conflict. I mean, I think that's just a misconception. I mean, we don't really deal with that, because as a brand and or company, we make different foods and different brands. So I haven't experienced that conflict. You know, no one would buy a company and then try to change everything. Like, it doesn't make sense. If you buy a company that's working, why would you change what made it successful? So, I mean, I think that's a misconception.
Okay. And you actually remain with RX Bars even after you sold the business. How come you decided for that? Is it a passion for continuing to work on that business? Is it to be part of the Kellogg's organization? Or what are the drivers to do that? I would imagine you could pretty much move to the Caribbean and kick back. So there must be something that drives you to keep going.
Yeah, that's a great question. The business is fun. There's a lot of growth ahead of us. And it's been a fun opportunity to work on a business that has a huge responsibility, that's part of a public company. It aligns with kind of my own motivation. And also, as the CEO and founder of a business, I feel I have a tremendous responsibility to serve the company. And it's really about self-motivation, what makes someone happy. Like, going to the Caribbean on an island wouldn't make me happy. going to work makes me happy. So it's been fun.
Don't tell anyone. Going to work makes you happy. You said Kellogg's would be interested in your particular kind of business and not change that if it's working. Is that actually something you do by design? I.e., is RX Bar, the organization, kind of separated from Kellogg geographically as well as from a reporting line? Or do you integrate a lot of things now with Kellogg?
We're not integrated functionally in any part of the business. We work together on things, of course, like internationally, legal, R&D, and other parts of the business, but we were separate organization. We're like a business unit within Kellogg, so we're not necessarily, we're not like a part of a business unit. We're a separate company. It's not like we are integrated.
So you're kind of a subsidiary, if you like.
Yeah, that's a good way to think about it.
Gotcha. And if I was to come to RX Bar and I am familiar with Kellogg before, would I notice a difference? And how would I notice I'm at RX Bar from an organizational perspective, other than maybe it's smaller?
Well, we have our own office. You would tell right away. It's the same culture we've had. So when you come to our office, you wouldn't see like Tony the Tiger in the lobby.
And is there something special to the RX Bar company culture?
Yeah, I would say humble culture. Right, humility is a value of the company. We're entrepreneurial, so we move fast and comfortable and ambiguity. We try to embrace chaos. We're also like a servant's mindset. It's an important part of our culture. So,
what kind of mindset?
A servant's mindset.
So gotcha.
We serve our customers, but we're here to serve each other as well. And everyone's willing to pitch in and help each other. So,
I'm interested in one thing, which is which intrigues me for a lot of these companies. You could just lay back, even with the company you have. I mean, it's running well, it's going well, it has a good reputation, but it seems like there is this drive for growth, right? A global expansion, you go into kids, and so on and so on. What is it about growing and expanding that is such a must?
I think it's a great question, and in a sense that I asked it a lot to myself. Personal, professional growth, and like winning and solving problems. I think growth makes people happy ultimately, and like winning and doing good and growing together is what motivates people, I think, or makes people happy. Like I said, either you're growing or you're not. It's kind of a binary, and it's a mindset that is a part of our culture. And it's also, I think it's a part of the culture in the United States broadly, is that we're a very progress, growth-oriented place. Like, people come here to grow professionally or with wealth or with whatever. It's personally, too.
A lot of your peers in these new emerging food areas, whether it's craft beers or, let's say, Chobani yogurt, which is also an incredible food story in terms of, revolutionizing that market, are taking on these food-related missions like food integrity, even funding other food startups against GMO, for better dairy, animal protection, etc. Does RX Bar have any such ambitions that go beyond kind of making a very good bar? Do you have some higher-end purpose that you're embracing, or how do you think and feel about that?
Our job is to help people live a better life, and so only the products we make enable people to do that. When you eat food that's good for you, that makes you feel better and live a better life. And so our focus is always on making the best food possible to enable people to live a meaningful life. So that's how we think about our purpose and role.
That sounds rather humble compared to a lot of the claims that you hear from others. For example, you are in Whole Foods, right? And they have pretty high standards to accept products. So you must be doing things around organic or certified, or is that not a criteria when you look at ingredients and things?
Well, for us, we focus on the most natural and best products or best raw materials, and not necessarily a claim or third-party certification.
Your consumers love you for, I guess, the simplicity. Is that kind of it?
I mean, we have a purpose, of course, and we donate a ton of food, and we do tons of donations and we do other things, but I think our job is to help our customers live a better life. And, you know, it's just inauthentic to us to try to like market some other cause, if that makes sense. We think it's BS that like these people spend a penny to get like food to other, you know what I mean?
Right.
It's kind of like that approach. Like it's off brand for us.
Right. And the simplicity of the package design, was that something that came very early? Did you guys do that yourself or with?
We hired a freelance, two designers called Scott and Victor. They helped us do an amazing job.
It really stands out because it is just a few ingredients, basically.
Thank you.
So now you're part of Kellogg. You're in year 5 or so. Where do you imagine all of this to be in year 10 and 15? It seems like you've been so successful so quickly. How can you even build on that?
In 10 years, we'd have a portfolio of brands, ones that serve the same interests. And I mean, I don't know how many brands, but we're continuing to brand outside of RX Bar. And so hopefully we have a portfolio that serves a very diverse group of customers, that is innovative, that helps people live a better life.
And so far, your brand extensions into kids, etc., are equally successful to the main bar business?
Yes, we're doing well. It's a different market in the sense of size, but it's doing well.
And your dad and your co-founder are still involved as well?
My dad's not. He never really was, but he's always around to support and mentor. But everyone's still involved in some capacity.
Well, thanks a lot, Peter, for your time. It's a great, straightforward story. What can I say? If people want to connect and know more about RX Bar or be part of your community, what's the best place? Where should they go to really experience what this is all about?
Website, my email, call us. We're always at events. Any way you can get in touch, rxbar.com. Our number is 312-624-8200. And my email is peter@rxbar.com.
That sounds fantastic. Thanks a lot. All the best.
Thank you so much, JP. Talk to you soon.
Bye.
Ciao.
And you, dear listener, you can always reach us at info@uberbrands.com. And that's spelled with a U-E, as it should be. That's also where you can find a lot more materials, not only on this podcast episode, but on Uber branding in general. If you like the podcast, then subscribe, tell your friends about it, shoot us up in the iTunes ratings, will you? And with that, I say thank you again and tschüss, goodbye.